This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your infinity symbol of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
Y se la pasa montando veneno, yeah. Yo prendo el veneno, 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 yeah. Tú haces lo que puedes, yo hago lo que quiero, quiero, quiero. Tú haces lo que puedes, yo hago lo que quiero, 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 quiero. Par de modelos con las copas hacia el cielo, yeah. Los diamantes parecen pedazos de hielo. Sencillo.
And we're listening to the track Veneno by J Balvin from his new record Energia, which was the subject of a piece written by our music reporter Joe Coscarelli, who is with us today. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Ben.
In the story that you just wrote this week in the Times about J Balvin, you talk about him at this point in his career. This is his fourth record.
Yeah, right? They're calling it his second album because it's sort of his second official album, you know, signed to a major label. I think, you know, he had some independent releases. He had some mixtapes. His album La Familia came out in 2013, and that's sort of what they wanted to frame as his big debut because now he was sort of a global concern.
Right.
And then the year after, they put out a B-sides collection to that album, a sort of deluxe edition, whatever it is, with a couple other songs that became big hits. And he has a body of work behind him, but this is sort of his second proper studio, major label, full push.
Okay. And he's huge at this point.
He's huge.
And he's 31, which is also kind of interesting.
Yeah. Not super young. He's been at it for a while.
And he's from Medellin, Colombia.
Correct.
We see this happening in pop music often, in a way. Somebody whose career is, by one measure, stratospheric.
Sure.
And by another measure, this person may not be recognized.
Yeah, I mean, we see it a lot in America, I think, like in the EDM scene. You know, you have a guy like a Flume or whatever it is who, you know, has millions of followers on social media. His tracks are all played millions and millions of times. He commands giant stages at festivals. But, you know, if you showed a picture of him to my mother, she would, you know, have zero clue who he is. And he could probably walk down the street in a lot of places and be fine.
And just to give listeners some example of how popular J Balvin is, if you don't know, the video for his single Jinza, which came out, I guess the song actually came out last year.
Yeah.
The video came out maybe earlier this year,
mm-hmm.
beginning of the year, has 578 million views.
Right.
And I think since you wrote your piece, since it went up, well, since you wrote it, I guess, a couple days ago, I'm
a
assuming.
A couple more million views.
Yeah, like 3 more million
views.
Yeah,
it's steadily climbing. And I think his YouTube account in general is like nearing 3 billion plays.
And what about the new record on the charts?
So the record, you know, it came out worldwide June 24th and debuted, you know, pretty low on the American charts. It didn't move a ton of copies, but it's number one, I think, on all the Latin album charts. And, you know, the singles have been very successful on the Latin part of the charts as well. Jinza, which you mentioned, was, you know, I think set a record for a solo artist. It was 22 straight weeks at number one.
And he's a worldwide success. As he said in your piece, he's being played on the radio in France.
Yeah. And
which,
like,
is weird.
Italy, you know, his songs are platinum in Italy.
Yeah.
Just places where even where Spanish, which, you know, most of his songs are entirely in Spanish.
And, well, that's the thing. Most of his songs, currently all of his songs, on the new record anyway, mm-hmm. are entirely in Spanish.
Yeah, a little Spanglish here and there, which is a reggaeton classic, but almost entirely Spanish.
I think on the earlier record there were some songs in English.
Yeah.
But so he's it's all Spanish now. That's a decision that he's made.
Yes.
And interestingly, he may be following a quasi-American playbook in terms of the kind of music that he's moving toward.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So he talks about it himself, right? Like, I think the way he sees it is, you know, he came into reggaeton as a fan of Daddy Yankee. Daddy Yankee's, you know, he was big in sort of out of Puerto Rico in the early 2000s. His album from 2004 was the biggest selling album of the decade. And to that point, you know, J Balvin had been into rock music. He'd been into Nirvana, and he still likes to play a little bit of Smells Like Teen Spirit at his concerts.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is a pretty typical thing for, I think, a Latin American teenager around his age. And he sort of had his whole world turned upside down by Daddy Yankee,
yeah,
who he calls the Jay-Z of Latin hip-hop.
Sure.
So if Daddy Yankee is the Jay-Z of Latin hip-hop, J Balvin sees himself as the Drake of reggaeton, of Latin hip hop. So
yeah,
he took, you know, a style of music that was hard and fast and aggressive and, you know, had a real moment. You know, if we think back to 2005 New York, there were many radio stations flipping their format to be entirely reggaeton.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't last. It mm-hmm. just... An executive from Universal Music, where J Balvin signed, you know, said to me, you know, it all got repetitive, it all got boring. And then we have this guy come out of Colombia, which is a place not known for its reggaeton,
right,
especially. And he sort of has a softer spin on it. You know, he's more melodic. He's sort of singing to the ladies. And he says, you know, I see myself like Drake. I'm the Drake of reggaeton. And
yeah,
that's a narrative that maybe was put on him early on, but he really embraced it. So now he's moving even more in that direction where, you know, like the song we just heard to start this podcast was, it's very Drake to me.
It is very Drakean. I mean, it's not just emotionally wounded song speech, but the sound,
yeah,
and the spaciousness in right. some of those songs. And also the lack of a reggaeton beat.
Sure.
So he's moving in two directions. You could say that he's moving away from reggaeton rhythm, that like classic Antillean beat, but he's moving in the direction of speaking Spanish.
Right. I think at his level coming into this album and sort of the people he was able to surround himself with, the standard playbook might have said, like, let's try a couple songs in English, mm-hmm. or let's do an American version of one of these big singles, which, like, you know, if we think back to Livin' La Vida Loca or whatever it was, you know, that when we've seen sort of Latin music cross over, there's been a Spanish single, a version of the single, and an English version of the single. And, like, all of that is, you know, was definitely a playbook that he could have gone with. But instead, he decided he was going to be very deliberate, take his time, continue building this sort of worldwide base that was gravitating to the music in Spanish, even if they didn't understand the words. And he, you know, he said maybe next album, maybe the one after that, he's going to take it as far as he can in Spanish because that's where he's most comfortable.
Let's stop here and hear a little bit of his song Jinza, which we referred to earlier, came out last year, video came out earlier this year. This is the remix with a whole lot of other people on it,
Daddy Yankee included.
Que saque lo de fiera, que grite como tú quieras, reggaeton que te quema, valemos toda la noche que yo corro con lo que sea.
And that's the Jinza remix by J Balvin. So, Joe, when you were reporting the story, hanging out with J Balvin, you went to Hot 97.
We did. We went and hung out with our friends at Ebro in the Morning, the morning show at Hot 97.
Yeah.
J Balvin and his team have a little bit of a relationship with them and Ebro in particular. I think they premiered some of his songs on Apple's Beats One radio.
Right.
It was funny to see him walk in a building like that where, you know, our storied premiere rap station, you know, he's a celebrity in the hallways. You know, all the DJs are taking photos with him.
Sure.
The program director, you know, he's getting stopped basically every few feet.
And yet, this is a station that does not play his music.
Yeah, he's not in the daytime playlist, you know? Like you might catch some reggaeton throughout the night, you know, in a DJ set or whatever it is, but he's not in rotation. He's not in heavy rotation.
Was that his idea to bring you there? Or was it just like something he had to do?
Yeah, it just seemed fun to do, you know? I always like going to Hot 97, saying what's up.
Sure. Yeah, but it kind of brilliantly shows the situation.
Sure.
Like this is the exact barrier.
And it illustrated perfectly. And, you know, we walked in and this was, you know, this talk about him sort of not getting played on stations like that was in the air. And someone said, you know, someone from the station said, you know, we'll play these dance hall songs. We'll play Caribbean music where most people don't know the words to that either. But, right. You know, it's on the air. And yet for some reason, with Spanish music, you know, even in a city that's, you know, so Latino, at a station that's, you know, very Latino behind the scenes, there's still this space between what we think people will listen to.
Sure. So as we said earlier, he's 31. He's been around for a little while, and I'm sure he has some of the wisdom of somebody who's, you know, out of his 20s.
Yeah.
Does he just feel like, yeah, I got time. Like this is going to happen. This is inevitable. Was that the idea that you got from him?
Or, yeah, you know,
or did it seem more like a struggle?
No, he doesn't seem tortured about it. He seems like he's happy with the growth that he's experienced in the last few years, and that, yeah, he believes it's inevitable. And I think some of the reason for that is because of the connections that he made between the last album in 2013 and now. Like,
yeah.
The other thing about Energia, this new album, is, you know, he has a single with Pharrell Williams, and he's very proud of the fact that, you know, Pharrell, they met, I think, at the Today Show. Pharrell sort of reached out to him, stayed and saw him play with his band and said, you know, let's connect. And he's very proud of the fact that when he got in the studio with Pharrell, they made a song in Spanish. Pharrell is singing in Spanish.
With a reggaeton beat. Which is called Safari, right?
Safari. Yeah. He's always saying, you know, I want to bring these people to my world. I don't want to have to go to them. The other example being Justin Bieber. Sorry, the Justin Bieber song from last year,
yeah,
has subtly a reggaeton beat, which, you know, maybe a lot of Justin Bieber fans didn't realize, but I think it was apparent to everybody involved in the creation of the song. So Bieber's team reached out to J Balvin. They had met, you know, I think he said at the Special Olympics where they, you know, were both performing or whatever. And Scooter Braun, Bieber's manager, called them and said, let's get you on the Latino remix for Sorry. And he did it all in Spanish, you know.
Yeah.
He sort of brought Bieber back into his world. Then, you know, those connections resulted in Pooh Bear, Justin Bieber's chief songwriter, working on this album as well.
Right.
And, you know, J Balvin brought Pooh Bear to Colombia, to his home, and that's where they recorded. I think he sort of prides himself on being this stalwart for his people and his culture and his language.
Sure. Did the name Romeo Santos come up at all?
You know, we didn't talk about Romeo Santos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think maybe Romeo Santos is the closest, is like a parallel to him. They're sort of on similar paths where they're extremely famous.
Yeah.
But maybe not in that crossover way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think he has his eyes on guys like Pitbull. Like, he mentioned Ricky Martin a lot. Like, he's not trying to concern himself maybe with more direct rivals.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, I mentioned Romeo Santos because we actually did a podcast about this some years ago. Romeo Santos, bachata star,
sure,
made a big push with a recent record where he was also singing, I think, entirely in Spanish.
And with Drake also.
Yeah, he got Drake to sing in Spanish.
Yes.
On the song Odio. And so that was the parallel to, in a way, I suppose, to J Balvin getting Pharrell to sing in Spanish.
Right.
But so he's not got his eye on Romeo Santos. He's got his eye on Drake and on
Kanye. And on Pharrell.
And,
you know,
Pharrell and Bieber.
And Bieber.
Because all these guys hang out together at, you know, major Globo entertainment events.
Right. He also, you know, he fancies himself pretty hip. He's like, he's into menswear. He's into fashion. He's, you know, he wants to be at the shows. He wants to be in the front row.
That's,
you know, he wants to be collaborating with designers. He's really thinking about a brand and about being like the American stars, really, that he sort of saw as a teenager. One of the things we talked about, and which is a little bit in my story, is that he came as an exchange student when he was 17 or 18 to the United States. Yeah. And, you know, he said, you know, I had been getting into rap music. I knew Jay-Z. I knew 50 Cent. But, like, I didn't know sort of the hold that they had on the American, you know, pop consciousness. He didn't realize that they were stars beyond the songs. That's something that he is striving for.
He was in Oklahoma, wasn't he?
He was in Oklahoma
for that
first
short visit.
He was in school in Oklahoma, and, you know, he said it was the first time he'd ever experienced discrimination because, you know, in Colombia he's light skin. He's from a good family. He'd mm-hmm. never seen anything like that. He was like, yeah, you know, I only hung out with two people, like the one black kid and the one Indian kid. And we were sort of the discriminated against. And he was, you know, he was sort of horrified because it wasn't the United States that he was expecting from movies and whatnot. So he sort of escaped. He tried to, you know, get out of there and come to New York, and eventually found himself in Miami and felt more comfortable, I think, with the music scenes there.
Was he in New York and Miami for a while, bouncing back and forth between there and Colombia?
Yeah, or? he was coming over, he said, on tourist visas, but he was staying longer than he should have and trying to make industry connections. And, you know, he was walking dogs and painting houses and doing roofing sort of illegally on the side, all trying to get his foot into the music industry. You know, this is right after the reggaeton peak, you know, sort of still in it. So he was trying to get in. You know, eventually he wasn't finding the foothold that he wanted. And he says, you know, he was getting advice like, start over, like go home, build something for yourself.
Yeah.
And do it from Colombia, not from the United States.
Right.
And I guess that's a lesson that stuck with him.
Do you have a menswear story about him?
Yeah.
Joe?
So after we went to Hot 97, we went to Barney's. Yeah. We went to Barney's in Chelsea. And, you know, we had a little bite at the cafe. It was daytime in the department store, but, you know, there were people around, and he was walking around like you or me, not like somebody with 3 billion plays on YouTube. You know, he's sort of stacking pairs of $600 pants and, you know, acting like a celebrity and yet not getting recognized.
Again, I feel like this is a perfect demonstration of, like, in a way, this is absurd.
Right.
It really is only a matter of time and certain arbitrary barriers that might have to come down.
But I think he enjoys it a little bit because he, you know, he likes to flaunt the fact that even when he's home in Colombia, he doesn't use bodyguards. He doesn't use security.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke with Pooh Bear, the songwriter, about going to record with him in Colombia. And he was like, you know, he didn't want to use security. But then we had to go to the mall for a pair of socks and we couldn't get through the streets. Like it was a disaster. And yet he sort of sticks to this idea that he's a humble man of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny to see that in action in New York City where, you know, walking on the street, he gets noticed here and there, you know, pretty sizable Latino population here.
Mm-hmm.
But in a place like Barney's, he's just another guy shopping.
Jinza, is that an Instagram filter? That's what I read.
I think it is. Yes, I think he took that from Instagram filter.
And it's just like, it's not, the word is a very minor detail in the song.
Yeah.
The song is just like,
it's a party song.
Hey, come on, enjoy this reggaeton.
Let's dance.
Let's dance.
Yeah. But the man loves social media.
Well, yeah, does he?
He's constantly on his phone. He's, you know, Snapchatting left and right. He's always on Instagram.
Yeah.
He does Twitter a little bit. But he's younger than his 31 years in his obsession, I think, with his phone and with social media.
Well, that's smart. So this is part of his battle plan.
Definitely.
He also has another song called Snapchat.
Snapchat, dedicated to all of the Snapchat messages that he receives from beautiful women around the world.
So to get back to the Justin Bieber connection, maybe we should play his sort of mellow acoustic. It's sort of mellow acoustic in the way that Justin Bieber himself has been
could still be a hit,
acoustic.
But
yes,
got a little softer feel.
So it's written by Pooh Bear, right?
Written with Pooh Bear. Yeah, they wrote it together in Colombia, I guess, and you know.
No High Titulo from J Balvin's new record Energia, and thank you, Joe Coscarelli.
Thanks for having me.
No hay título, no hay título, no hay título, no hay título. Empezamos como amigos y todo se complicó. Siempre fui real contigo, me aceptaste como soy. Tú te fuiste envolviendo y yo me enamoré. No sabes cuánto lo siento, yo nunca lo esperé.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Thank you to Joe Coscarelli. You can read his article about hanging out with J Balvin at nytimes.com/music. Our producer is Jocelyn Gonzalez, and you can hear this episode and all other previous episodes of the podcast at nytimes.com/podcast. See you next week.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.